You may have noticed a short pause on the release of this week's Pop and Play episode. We thought it was appropriate, given the student-led protests at Columbia University and colleges across the U.S., to take a moment and reflect. Sometimes play just doesn't feel right for a moment. It feels inappropriate, frivolous, a distraction. And we don't want to be a distraction from important causes and issues. Our students, all of them, need our love and our care. So we took the time to attend to the needs within our own community. People in your life might need that too.
But play matters. And even when it feels wrong to play, we all need to provide our brains and our bodies some time for peace, frivolity, and joy. If you feel up for it, play a video game. Turn on some pop music. Watch crap TV. Hang out with a friend. Playing isn't a failure. It's charging your battery. We all have work to do to make our world and communities better places. And at times, we need to play, pull back, and take care of ourselves so that we can also be ready to intervene, interrupt, and resist injustice.
So thanks for hanging out with us each of these episodes. Hopefully, it's as much fun to listen to as it is for us to make. Now, back to play. Welcome to Pop and Play, the podcast all about play in its frivolous, joyful, serious, and also powerful forms. This podcast is hosted by myself, Nathan Holbert.
And me, Haney Yoon. We're two education researchers that care a lot about play. Each week, we chat with other scholars, artists, activists, parents, and children about the significance and value of play in their lives.
And in this season, we've been exploring what it means to play roles. What is it? Why do we do it? And what's so fun about it?
This week, we're tackling the ultimate role-playing, drag. Drag is all about play. Playing with gender expressions, playing with fashion, playing with identity. Drag is performance, it's exaggeration, it's transgressive, and it's a lot of fun. This week, we're talking to Little Miss Hot Mess, a drag performer, academic, and author of two children's books, The Hips and the Drag Queen Go Swish, 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 and If You're a Drag Queen and You Know It. They also have an article on our Play and Wellbeing website, playandwellbeing.org, if you want to check it out, entitled A Giant Mashed Up Ball of Play-Doh, A Conversation of Queer Play with colleague and also good friend Harper Keenan.
Check it out.
Check it out.
It's on the World Wide Web.
Yes. playandwellbeing.org. Hashtag check it out.
So why are we having this conversation? You know, what is it about drag that we wanted to bring into this season's conversation about playing roles? Haney, maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about your own experiences with drag.
Well, currently I'm a drag super fan, Drag Race super fan. That's what they call the fans of Drag Race
sure.
super fans. So I actually have a lot of experience on my couch and Paramount Plus with Drag Race.
All those drag performances on your couch.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But okay, so I think we have to have an honest conversation, right, about our own experiences
sure,
with drag, right? And we don't have a lot of it, and growing up at least. And we've talked about this before, I think, on the pod. I grew up in a very religious, conservative, there's a lot of rules in my house sort of context, and a lot of those rules had to do with the Bible and Jesus watching me all the time.
Oh my.
And so I feel like there were a lot of rules. Yeah. And so I think there was some things out in the world that I very much enjoy now that I thought were scary and dangerous.
Yeah.
Right? Like I thought rock music was scary and dangerous because if you play them backwards, Satan's going to spit to you. Right?
I mean, you've seen those haircuts.
And then I also thought, I felt like a lot of times when I look back on it, I was scared of things that I just didn't understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I felt like drag for me was a very simplistic thing. Like it was like, oh, it's men dressing up like women, which is, I think, far from what drag is. And I didn't understand it. And so it was scary to me. Right. Because I had very traditional gender roles in my house, traditional rules and things like that. Later on, I've come to kind of realize that breaking the rules is actually kind of fun, right? But what about you?
Yeah, I mean, so it's for me, I don't have a lot of experiences with it. And similar to you, you know, certainly didn't have those experiences when I was growing up. So any that I have had have been more recent. You know, I think having grown up in Missouri and Kansas in the Midwest in the 80s.
We love the Midwest, by the way. Don't sue us, Midwest.
Shout out to the Midwest. I was thinking about this. The drag is, drag was portrayed in most media as kind of a like a joke, like a yep. like a punchline to some joke, and it was either, you know, somebody, sometimes it was somebody is, this person is dangerous. How do you know they're dangerous? Well, they're in drag. Or other times it was, this person is silly and perhaps not serious. How do you know that? Because they're in drag, right? It was always kind of a shorthand for, you know, giving some character some possibly negative quality. And so I think growing up, my sense of it was sort of built entirely from that, that it wasn't something that was really real in the real world, or, and if it was, it wasn't something that, you know, is good or playful or fun. It was somehow or another dangerous or silly. So yeah, I definitely didn't have a positive sense of it when I was younger, and I just don't think I was exposed to it all. I mean, believe it or not, in the middle of Southern Missouri, there just wasn't a lot of what? Drag shows that I was aware of. Maybe they're happening everywhere. But, you know, certainly not until I was older that I even sort of encounter it and see it and then realize that, like, oh, this is just people having a great time. Now, that said, I am not a RuPaul scholar like you are. And my experience with Drag Race is extremely limited. My experience encountering or going to drag shows is pretty much non-existent. And so I also feel, while I've never necessarily had heavy negative feelings towards drag, I certainly feel like a complete idiot when it comes to it. And so I know in our conversations, I've occasionally asked you a question, be like, look, I know I sound like I'm out of the 1950s, but explain this to me. So I do feel very like I'm constantly learning new things about what it is whenever I'm now getting exposed to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think about, like, why is it that I really, really wanted to have a conversation with Little Miss Hot Mess in one of her episodes where I'm talking about role, playing roles and identity. And I think we've said this so many times in every season of our podcast that play is frivolous and joyful, right? But that's always
said in
also,
the intro.
Yes. Also serious and intellectual and work, right?
Yep.
Not like work in the sense that we know it, but it takes work. It takes like planning. It takes some ideas. It takes some risk. It takes all of these things to actually put it together, right? And I think over the past few years, being a Drag Race super fan, is you start to realize, like, when you actually get to observe and watch people play in their craft and in their art, that you start to realize that the things that they do and the practices that that goes into doing something is really serious, and it takes a lot of effort and energy. And so I think that's why we want to have them on here.
Yeah. Getting kind of another angle at this, ways in which people play roles and what that play looks like, how you put yourself into that play, what you get out of that play. And, you know, another theme that we've certainly encountered this season that I think is certainly part of this conversation is the ways in which this kind of play is both built around and within communities, and also the ways in which it is danger. It is, as you said, putting yourself out there and trying something and seeing how others respond to it. I think that's all something I'm really excited to kind of hear Little Hot Mess talk about.
Mm-hmm. I think this episode too is really important because we live in a current political climate that makes it very hard for certain people to actually enact play. Right?
Yeah,
and I definitely think drag performers are always in the hot seat in a political climate right now that is still stuck kind of in the 1950s.
Yeah, right.
That kind of has the view that 7-year-old Haney and Nathan might have had, where we're like, these drag people are just jokes and they're silly and they are not to be taken seriously, right? And I think some of that, I would venture to say, has to do with the lack of curiosity and understanding of it.
Totally. And you know, I use the word ignorance, but also just kind of the fear of the things you don't know and the things that you don't understand. And rather than being willing to try to understand it or to try to get a different sense of it, just sort of acting on that ignorance.
Exactly. Like, you don't have to like it.
Sure.
Like, I don't have to always like Star Wars.
Actually, in this society, you do have to like Star Wars.
Okay. Anyway, but it's not that you don't have to like it. Not everybody has to agree. Not everybody has to like the same things, right? Not everybody has to appreciate the same kind of art.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it's understanding the art form that is probably important.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear more.
Yeah. Today, we have with us, and I'm very excited, Little Miss Hot Mess. She's a visual performance artist, assistant professor, drag queen, and a founding member of Drag Story Hour. She has two books out, The Hips and the Drag Queen Go Swish, 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 and If You're a Drag Queen and You Know It, two children's books that are delightful if you haven't checked them out.
Very excited.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We like to usually start out these conversations, though, a little easy, and that is by playing a game to kind of get into the spirit of the conversation. Does that sound okay?
Wonderful. I'm so excited.
So we came up with a game that's all about drag names. All right. Now, for those who may not know that are listening, and I certainly would have counted myself in this category of people before I did a little researching here. Drag names are playful ways of expressing a persona. They often involve puns and jokes, and they not only depend upon the performer, but also the context in which the performance might be taking place in, right? So in this game, what I'm going to try to do is give you a context and a performance task, and your task will be to give us a drag name that might work with it. And
oh, wow. You're putting me on the spot here.
I am, which... We recognize, and we were playing this game, that it was a bit of an ask. And so to make it a little bit easier, I'm also going to ask Haney to do this too.
Yes, okay.
I'll put Level Haney on the spot. Killed. I'll try to also make it easier. I think one thing we'll try to do is give you some kind of rules that you could use to construct the name if you'd like as well.
Great, great, great.
But as a pro, feel free to go, you know, go hog wild. All right, so our first category that we're going to play with here is that you have been invited to be in Biden's cabinet. All right. And your job is to come up with a drag name. And here's my suggested rules. You can have a combined an adjective, the name of a president, and an ice cream flavor.
Ooh, okay.
To give you a second to think.
Do we have a second to think? Okay.
To give you a second to think, I'm going to have Haney tell us what she's come up with. Haney, you've been invited to Biden's cabinet. What's your drag name?
Loud Taft Strawberry.
Does that work?
I'm going to rearrange that. I'm going to say at least say Loud Strawberry Taft.
Oh, that's better. That's better.
I was going to say Tasty Coolidge Vanilla, but I think I'm stuck on Biden a little bit. I almost said old, but I didn't want to go there.
So, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Okay. I said Salty Carter Orange Sorbet. No, I feel like Little Miss Hot Mess had another one.
Oh.
Well, how family friendly is this podcast again?
Oh. Go off the rails.
I was to say, this isn't really Biden administration. This is more other branches of government. But I also just thought Tasty Twink, pulling in the news.
Just go straight in. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or Tasty Twinkerbell, maybe we could say, if we want to go.
Oh, my God,
that's
I
good.
Love it.
That's good. Yeah.
Tasty. That is such a good adjective.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good one. All right. How about this one? Now that we've stretched this muscle, Madonna has invited you to be a backup singer on the new tour. And so we're going to suggest your name is a combination of a spice, the phrase Bob of House, and then a fantastical creature.
Okay. I'm going to go with Cardamom Bob of House Medusa.
Okay. I'm going to be Bolognese Bob of House Basilisk.
Bolognese?
That's not a spice, but it's a good word.
Oh, I feel like someone should choose Star Anise.
Star Anise.
That's basically a drag name. All right. I don't know. We might need to re-record this because I don't know if I'm going to say the name of the spice correctly, but okay. I'm going to say Berber Bob Baba Yaga.
Whoa.
It's an Ethiopian spice blend. I've eaten it, but
yes,
I've never pronounced it.
I've eaten that too.
Yes.
I've eaten that too.
I was looking for a good B, you know?
This is a lesson for us that you don't mess with pros.
It's all in good fun. It's all in good
fun. Yeah. I feel like this is kind of a good transition because you came on the recording and told us that you just got back from drag or just did drag last night. And so maybe starting with that, I'm just curious, how did you get into it? What was your start into the performance of drag?
Well, I've been doing drag for over 15 years now, which is wild to say. It's, I mean, at this point in my life, probably the thing that I've done most consistently for that length of time. Yeah. And I mean, and I would also say in some ways, I've always wanted to do drag, even before I knew the term or the concept or anything like that. You know, I was always a performative and somewhat flamboyant child, and I love to dress up and play pretend, and, you know, prototypical queer kid who, you know, every now and then would throw a towel over my head or, you know, put on one of my mom's pieces of clothing or her high heels and parade around and feel my fabulosity. So that's kind of the early version. And in high school, I did some theater, and I at one point auditioned for A Midsummer Night's Dream. And the only part that I wanted was the drag part in the play within the play. And that was kind of my first time, like, really trying it out. Cause we had to, you know, not only audition with a monologue, but also for that production, we were using movement. So I had to audition with a dance.
Wow.
And I came up, with this kind of early drag routine where I performed to, Dude Looks Like a Lady,
and
then transitioned into Time After Time, and I did it on rollerblades.
Wow.
So I did this like sort of like figure skating routine, and I think really tore it up. And but it wasn't until, you know, my early 20s after college, and some more dabbling there, that I moved to San Francisco and started seeing, you know, real life drag shows, and kind of instantly knew I wanted to be part of it. And so I asked around, and there happened to be this kind of show for newcomers coming up called Star Search. And I
like Star Search, the actual show?
Like a drag version of Star Search.
Like
a Please Don't Sue Us for Using Your Name version of Star Search. Yeah.
Storm Search, what?
Right. I mean, there was no pretense of really hiding it, but yeah, it was a cute little homage. And actually that, there's a theme here, that very first number that I did was also on ice skates in the club. So.
Oh, wow.
There was an element of that in that past of mine as well.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome. I'm like thinking about, you know how performers and artists, there's sometimes some of them decide to do all the things, but some of them have a direction or a genre that they always want to go into. So I'm wondering what made you gravitate towards drag? Because I hear you and I think about how there's so many different directions you could have gone, right? Like, you could have done musical theater, you could have done acting because it sounds like you were really interested in acting. You could have gone into fashion, right? Or you could have, you know, like, drag is another genre that you could do. So what is it about drag that was compelling to you or different from those other art forms?
That's such a great and insightful question. I mean, I think in some ways, and I think a lot of this was intuitive, you know, it wasn't something that I was really thinking about or plotting out, but I think part of it at the time for me was getting to combine so many different art forms, like thinking about the performance and the musicality and the fashion and visuals of it, and to an extent, the sort of narrative of constructing a number and all these sorts of things. And I think part of it too was the queer community aspect of it, of having this, kind of built-in community that really kind of grows to understand you as a performer, especially at the time. It wasn't like a small community per se, but it was an intimate community. And even when people were coming in and coming out, there was this sense of familiarity. And I think maybe in hindsight too, one of the things that I've realized that I really like about drag is that it's quick and it is playful and it can be a little bit messy. And, you know, it's not about perfection. Yeah. It's not about like building some masterpiece. It really is about constructing something usually in the space of like 3 to 5 minutes and then often never doing that number again. And watching other people doing it and then taking your turn and then jumping back into the audience. And yeah, kind of it just being this like cycle and hustle at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, being a Drag Race super fan, I will say, like, the thing, I think I've said this to Nathan so many times, like, it is so hard to try to be a drag queen. Like, there are so many things that you have to know how to do. Like, I'm like, is it fair that you have to know how to sew something, but then you have to know how to be comedic, but then you have to know how to act, and then you have to know how to dance, and then you have to know how to sing, and you have to do all of these different things. Like, there's no, that is not for the faint of heart.
That's a lot
of
skills.
That is true. That is true. Although, also, in the real world, and this is no shade to anybody, everyone has all those skills.
I love when a sentence starts with that.
Solid start.
It's true. I mean, yeah, not everyone has all those skills. Right. And I think you need a dash of each, but you don't necessarily need to be an expert in each. And again, I think that's one of the kind of beautiful things about drag as an art form is that that's also part of the communal aspect. You know, I don't know how to do hair, but I know who to talk to who can do wigs and who can do them better than I could ever dream up. And so, even though we are often kind of solo performers, there is a lot of community effort that goes into building that persona, that look, all those sorts of things.
I think the idea that you talked about with it being sort of this quick and sometimes not perfectly refined, you know, I'm sure many, 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 many performances are extremely refined, but the way in which you're talking about it makes me think about the sort of playful nature of that. You know, you're playing, you're trying something out, you're dabbling and exploring, and then, like, you know, move on into the next thing that you play with, which I really like. I mean, that to me kind of highlights the ways in which this is such a playful performance, playful way of engaging. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about, you know, this persona of Little Hot Mess, like, has that been your persona from the beginning, from that first performance on Star Search?
Starm Search.
I would keep going with that. How'd you come up with it? You know, when did it come about?
Yeah, for me, I don't really think of myself as having a persona per se. I mean, some drag performers do really kind of create a character and a biography and a history and you know, are really kind of into that fictionalization of who they are in drag. And then for me, I feel like I kind of just let different aspects of my personality shine when I get in drag, and sometimes all kind of surprising me as well, you know, what sort of bubbles to the surface. But within that, I do feel like I kind of, well, the one way that I often describe my drag is, if you've seen the film Beaches, which I don't want to make any assumptions, but
the many times, in fact.
Many times, too.
Okay, I'm in the right place. The transition from Maya Bialik to Bette Midler is my drag. It's like, I am that little sort of like tap dancing child into sort of like campy diva. And another way of sort of putting it is, like, I feel like I'm sort of perpetually stuck in the body of like a 13-year-old girl about to have her bat mitzvah, you know, and like all the sort of like awkward teenage talent show vibes that might come with that. But with like a little bit of Jewish grandma mixed in as well.
So. Oh, that's like an awesome description.
Incredibly evocative. Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I really love what you're saying about, like, because I think, you know, there's on the one hand, you could really appreciate the aesthetics and the art that goes into drag, right? Not just the visual art and the performance art part, but then I also hear you talking about the community and the support and the, you know, the people that kind of surround you. And I think, like, doing any kind of performance is sort of a risk, right? You're like taking a risk and you have to do it in a place that feels safe and collaborative and, you know, whatever you try, people are going to support you and clap for you and, you know, tell you that you're doing a good job and then give you feedback and let you kind of move forward and help you with that. And I think that's just like a really beautiful part of, you know, any kind of play community.
I think, you know, it and it's a balance too, right? I mean, I do think that drag, for me at least, I never want drag to be completely safe. You know, like I always do want that element of risk. And I think you're right about the community, and I also don't want to totally romanticize it either. You know, sometimes not everyone does clap for you. Sometimes, you know, feedback isn't always as nice as it could be, even if it's kind and trying to help you get to a better place. And so yeah, I think there is always a little bit of a dance in that kind of risk and safety and support and community kind of amalgamation.
Mm-hmm. As my dad always said when I was growing up, wouldn't be fun if it was easy.
Exactly.
Usually saying that when something went horribly wrong. So can you tell us a little bit about the Drag Story Hour? How'd you get involved in that? And you know, maybe just give us, for our listeners, a short description of what it is.
So Drag Story Hour started semi-officially in 2015 in San Francisco. It was started by an organization called Radar Productions, which was founded by the queer author Michelle T and managed at the time by authors Julián Delgado Lopera and Virgie Tovar. And kind of collectively, they had this, you know, wild but maybe practical idea to bring children and drag performers together and to kind of liven up a typical, you know, Saturday or Sunday morning story hour at your local public library. And I think it was such a wonderful, you know, spark of genius inspiration to just recognize the ways that, you know, so many forms of kids play and so many forms of drag really did overlap. And I had actually personally just moved away from San Francisco, like literally just a few months before this started happening. And I started seeing on social media these amazing photos of kids and drag performers that just, like, you know, melted my heart and and gave me all of the FOMO. And so maybe if, you know, 6 months later or so, Michelle T came out to New York and we decided to do a Drag Story Hour there. And basically, you know, from the moment I did it, I was totally hooked and knew that it was something that I wanted to continue to do. And, you know, I'd worked with kids in various capacities before, and there was one specific event that I'd done a few years before, probably with kids at a museum where this drag artist had a residency there. And as part of that, hosted this night where kids could come and help kind of like dress up or decorate a drag queen. Like it was actually a little bit scary. Like we were wearing these kind of pre-made dresses and kids got to like literally like hot glue things onto them. but it was this like wonderful moment of interaction and getting to really, you know, witness their creativity, like literally that up close to us. Just kind of folding all those different experiences in. I knew I wanted to be part of it. And I've, you know, worked with many other people around the country to build up chapters of Drag Story Hour and eventually to build up, you know, an international organization called Drag Story Hour, where we support those local chapters and build connections and do all that sort of stuff. So it's a wonderful organization that's dear to my heart.
That's great.
I mean, I'm thinking about the article. I mean, you've written several articles about drag pedagogy. And one of the things that I think really speaks to a lot of people, especially educators, is the idea of drag as a form of strategic defiance. And I think, you know, even as you're talking about Drag Story Hour, I'm just thinking about all the ways that we are conceptualizing reading, right, in schools and in the larger landscape. And we don't necessarily think of reading as playful and fun and an exploratory thing. I think we want to, like, shove reading down people's throats, right? And I think what drag does, or Drag Story Hour does, is it kind of, like, defies what reading can possibly be and opens up the potential for it. And so I'm thinking about, like, what are not, you don't have to comment on the science of reading and all that stuff, but tell us more about the connections or what you want people to understand about the idea of reading, besides that it's fundamental.
And it's a science.
I know, I was gonna say, I can't speak to the science of reading, maybe slightly to the art of reading, but I mean I do think that in a broad sense, and this is something that in some ways has only occurred to me relatively recently, but in all drag is about storytelling, right? It may not be about reading, but it is about kind of, you know, world building and character building, and often creating a narrative, again, even if that's only in the space of, you know, 3 minutes of a lip sync, or, you know, only uses kind of really simple or gestural or choreographed kinds of actions to signify some kind of movement. But it's about, you know, invoking feeling with your audience. And so Yeah, I think in that way, you know, Drag Story Hour is actually much more logical than it may seem, because it really is just sort of translating some of those elements for children.
Mm. You know, I was thinking actually in reading one of your articles about, I think you mentioned that, like, it's kind of an obvious pairing in some ways. And despite the sort of sense that, like, what's going on here? It's kind of like obvious once it happened. It's like, of course, kids are playing all the time, and they're playing in all sorts of different ways. And they're playing with costumes, they're playing with dress up, and they're playing with, you know, acting and playing roles. And so is this. And, you know, I love the, you know, kind of you're alluding to this sense of not just, it's also that this gives another example of how adults can play, and for mm-hmm. young people to be able to see that play happening by an adult and then also engage in that play with that adult. I mean, that to me is a really kind of beautiful idea that's happening in this space.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's just on a very, like, visceral and emotional level, it is so nice to just get to experience that and to see, you know, the wonder in a child's eyes when you walk into the room dressed head to toe in sequins and being larger than life and, you know, wearing so many colors or patterns or just kind of being this overstimulating, you know, sensorial presence. And and I just think back to how much I would have loved that and adored that myself as a kid if I, you know, could have extended that dress up to be even more and more and more fabulous. And so, yeah, sometimes honestly, Drag Story Hour is also just feels like a healing moment for me of getting to, like, yeah, to play in ways that I wasn't necessarily able to as a child.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think those two are wonderful points that you both have made, because I think one of the things that we don't get to see enough is kids don't get to see adults play enough. Yeah. And I think from that, I think what kids take away from it is, I don't know if you've ever seen this TikTok where this girl is, like, crying because she's like, I don't want to be an adult. Like, and she's, like, crying about it for a long time, and her mom's trying to console her, like, well, it's okay because you're, like, 8 years old.
You got time.
Yeah. But I think it's this idea that you don't look forward to adulthood because what happens in adulthood is that you lose the sense of wonder and play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so true. Like, that's an example that you see, you know, not just in drag, but just, like, in other kinds of art forms that have to do with play and creativity. And, you know, as you transition to becoming an adult or whatever that means, right, that there is examples of that also happening out there.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And yeah, I mean, when we started, I was talking about how last night I went out in drag, and honestly, recently with Story Hour, I've tended to mainly get in drag for Story Hours. I haven't been as active in the nightlife as much. And it was nice to sort of step out or step back into that playground for me. And the show that I went to, I didn't actually perform. I was a judge for this lip syncing competition where kind of the idea is that drag queens shouldn't have all the fun and anyone should get to try lip syncing and performing in their own way. Yeah. And, you know, being
it's
the
for
new
you,
year,
Haiti, it's for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Next time you're in LA. It has this kind of, like, almost like we're all just kids back in our bedrooms, like, throwing whatever we can onto ourselves and lip syncing in the mirror kind of vibe. And yeah, there is just something so wonderfully playful about that, I weirdly sort of found myself getting emotional just being like, how lucky are we to be in this space where we get to do this and create this for ourselves?
Yeah, that's so true.
I like that.
Well, I feel like as an ending question, we kind of want to think about, like, what are some stereotypes or narratives or definitions about drag that you think that you want to kind of dispel, or that you want to have people kind of rethink and think about differently? I know that's a very loaded, big question. So I ask that with, it's kind of like, I don't mean any shade. That's how I'm going to start it. It's sort of a loaded question.
Right. As if drag and discourse did not intersect. I mean, I think on a very basic level, one of the myths that I always like to dispel is that, you know, a drag queen is a man in a dress, or a drag queen is a male performer performing, you know, with feminine attire and qualities, or a drag king is the opposite. And I do think, historically, drag has always been much more expansive than that. And I think, you know, even in the past 5 to 10 years, we've really seen an explosion of, you know, people of all identities approaching drag from all sorts of angles and with all sorts of, you know, imaginative interpretations. And yeah, I think that's important to recognize. And I think that's also important to recognize to challenge some of the more political myths about drag and who's doing it and, you know, that it's sexualized and all these sorts of things. And then the other myth that I sort of, it's a little more nuanced, but that I do think we need to unpack is this idea that drag isn't dangerous. And, you know, that's it's a slogan that, you know, is powerful and is important in the moment, given all the attacks that we're seeing against drag in general and drag story hour and, you know, drag for children. And so, yeah, it's not dangerous in the way that I think a lot of our critics want to think that it is, or you know, disingenuously position it as. But again, as we sort of talked about towards the beginning, I do think that it's important to sort of recognize the playful dangers of drag and that balance between risk and safety and, you know, better a broken arm than a broken spirit, right? And I think that sometimes with drag, we do need to be willing to put ourselves out there, maybe not to, you know, literally break bones, but to take those risks and to walk into the unknown and not know what's going to happen and figure it out kind of collectively. And so, I worry sometimes that in the discourse that we have now, that there is this move to sanitize drag or to make it seem entirely family friendly or to make it seem, all sunshine and lollipops and rainbows. And I think it's okay to embrace the mess a little bit as well.
Yeah. I think we've talked about that a lot on our show about play just in general, right? Because I think there is also in a very parallel discourse that we often like to think of play in a very sanitized way too. And you think young kids play, right? Like we think all play is like innocent and fun and it's all in good, whatever, in good humor. But sometimes it's not, right? They say very harmful things to each other about gender and race and their identities and about age. You know, like I just feel like I've heard the whole gamut of very problematic things happening in play. But I think the response is not, let's get rid of it.
Yeah.
Like, let's ban it. Let's make them not play because we don't want to hear that stuff or we don't want them to be violent. So let's like really eliminate all violent play, right? That doesn't mean you eliminate violence because you eliminate it from their play, right? But it is sort of that space to kind of work it out and see what happens in it and to maybe intervene when you have to intervene and to think about how to extend it and shift it. So, I think that's a wonderful point. Like, any form is not going to be without risk or danger or problems, right? Or issues.
Yeah. But I think also what drag offers, and this is something that I've been thinking a lot about in my work recently, is it also offers playful ways to make some of those corrections, right? Whether that is internally or whether that's with the broader world. So again, you know, things like shade and reading are playful ways of offering feedback, you know, of sometimes calling someone in or getting them in line when they've maybe overstepped or done something offensive. And I think similarly, we can use some of those tools, you know, in these kind of broader political discourses to playfully snap back and to not have to sort of like put on our suit and tie and say we're respectable citizens, but to literally, you know, kind of sass and say, this is who you think I am, but like, I'm showing you how fabulous I am. And, you know, don't you want to join this party? Like, we need to kind of, I think, own that playfulness a little bit more in responding to these things.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Little Hot Mess, for talking with us and taking the time to talk with us about your performance and about the Drag Story Hour. Before we let you go, one thing that we like to do is we like to ask our guests, what's popping? And by that, we just mean, what stuff are you into right now? What kind of pop culture are you consuming? What kind of books are you reading? Movies, TV shows, games you're playing? What's popping for you right now?
Yeah, one thing I think that's popping for me right now is getting back into games, board games. Like, I've never been a huge video game player, but like casual games, I've really been loving the New York Times place recently and just reminding myself to take those little breaks to play and also I think building more intentional spaces for social play as well. One of my 2024, I may not call it a resolution, but goals for 2024 is to learn or try out Dungeons and Dragons, I think is sort of coming back around. A lot of my students are playing it, yep. And I feel ready. I feel ready to drag up Dungeons and Dragons.
Man,
I know it's already been done on TV, but.
We've had a lot of conversations about Dungeons and Dragons on this podcast.
A lot this season. That's great.
Right on track.
Yes, I'm glad to be on trend.
we got some experts we can send your way.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I love that.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. This was so great. It was really wonderful talking to you. I definitely want to say check out those two children's books. Yeah. They're amazing. Everybody should get them for their classroom library.
And also, Little Hot Mess wrote a blog post, right? On play and well-being.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, yes. On our playandwellbeing.org, right? Check out Little Miss Hot Mess's essay on play. I will say I'm definitely a fan. Like, I love your writing. I think your writing is amazing. It just is so rich and theoretical, but then also playful and just really important. So,
yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. And total mutual appreciation society right here.
Yeah. Aw. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pop and Play is produced by Haney Yoon, Nathan Holbert, Lalitha Vasudevan, Billy Collins, and Joe Rena Ferry at Teachers College, Columbia University with the Digital Futures Institute. This episode was edited by Billy Collins and Adrian Vitullo.
For a transcript and to learn more, visit tc.edu/popandplay. Our music is selections from Leaf Eaters by Poddington Bear, used here under a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. Blake Danzig provided our social media and outreach support. Follow at Pop and Play Pod on Instagram and TikTok for more of what's poppin', like the trashies with Ioana Litterat. Thank you to Meyer Clark and Abu Abdelbaghi for support with our website and additional materials. And thanks to you for listening.